Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why Mylowe's Rewards members get a free Valspar paint or exterior stain sample to test your look to confidently refresh your space. Offer valid in-store only 87 to 820. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken in time of purchase. See associate for details. Rewards program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
If you wanted a masterclass on how to lose public trust, prosecute a dad for saving his daughter, and then try to keep the whole thing under wraps. That's exactly what went down in Lono County, Arkansas, where prosecutors weren't just doubling down on charging Aaron Spencer with second-degree murder. They tried to gag the whole world from even talking about it, and they almost got away with it. We're talking about a man who shot the predator accused of repeatedly SA-ing his daughter. A man acting under what many could call pure instinct and what Arkansas law just might call justifiable force. In fact, it actually does, if it's interpreted correctly. But you have a DA in Lono County that, I don't know how anyone could look at this case and think, let's go after dad. Unless maybe that person has some of the same propensities as the predator that's dead. I don't know. I have no idea. I'm not saying. But I'm saying maybe we should look. Because it feels like somebody's being protected here. Why would you not go after a child predator? Why would you let this man out on $5,000 bond? And then why would you prosecute the dad who saved his daughter's life after said predator that you let out came back and kidnapped her? I don't know. I don't know what kind of person does that and goes after the dad other than another predator. Maybe not predator in the sense of an SA type predator, but a predator. A predator out hunting a dad for doing the right thing. Rather than let this case play out in the light, the state tried to keep it in the dark, sweeping, copy, paste, gag ordering, because that's what they do. It was the gag order, as you'll find out, it was pretty pathetic. Copy paste from another case that it didn't even make a whole lot of legal sense. Yeah. Literally ripped from another case, shut down public disclosure, barred the family from speaking, and buried court documents the public had every right to see. Until the Arkansas Supreme Court stepped in, the grown-ups came. In this segment, Bob Mata and I dive into the legal absurdity of the gag order, the Supreme Court's total takedown of it, and the bigger question that no one seems to want to answer. What exactly were they trying to hide? Because when the legal system starts acting like the public is the enemy of justice, it's time to ask who they're really protecting and why. Let's get into it.
And again, if their move is to try him with every fiber of their being believing that he's going to be acquitted and that, you know what, we tried him, the jury of his peers acquitted him, that's that. And then it puts them in the position of a fence rider, yeah, to where they didn't take a position on it. So like if Fossler's family is beefing like, oh, because I think he has kids, daughters and shit, yeah, man. So, you know, it's like,
I wonder how many of them were abused by him.
I mean, dude, it's like, it's hard to say. Yeah. It's hard to say. You know, he hails from Indiana,
mm-hmm,
like the little port area.
Yeah.
So, you know, and he ended up moving out to Arkansas kind of recently. So, yeah, I don't know, man. It's a puzzling case, but it's important. It's an important case for us to be squawking about a lot. Yeah. We need to bullhorn the shit out of this case. Like, if this guy gets, because you never know what a jury is going to do.
No, you don't.
You know what I mean? And you never know how a prosecutor is going to try a case. You know, it's like, think about, I was trying to explain to Allison. She's like, well, you know, like, I'm like, are you kidding? Like, the prosecutor can come up with any fucking fakakta theory that he wants. Mm-hmm. Like, that's facts. I mean, look at the Pam Hupp and Russ Faria thing. Like, that prosecutor, when she was just dead set that Russ had killed Pam's friend. Mm-hmm. I sadly can't remember the victim's name in that case.
Yeah.
And like, the shit that she was coming up with, like, that he was going to this game night with his friends, and this was some kind of weird pact between this group of gamers.
Yeah. The thing about
that
Pam,
woman, like, yeah, it's like, so I, it's just scary. It's scary. And the Spencer family is going through it.
Let's dive into the gag order a little bit, because that was a big thing in this. And it also, you know, it continues to lead us down the road a little bit of why such a gag order on a case like this? Again, unless you're protecting information or someone or facts or other people. I mean, maybe it's absolutely nothing. But again, the gag order was eventually lifted by the Arkansas Supreme Court. But give me some insight. Why was there such a strict sweeping gag order on this damn thing to begin with? And how did it finally get lifted?
So I think the impetus was that Aaron Castinelli, one of Aaron's attorneys, went out and kind of made a statement that echoes exactly what we're screaming, mm-hmm. that he's a hero, that any father would have done this, that, you know, this guy's was like a super predator, an apex predator. He was looking at 43 counts of essay and other things, all relating to the same little girl. And like once she made that statement publicly, I think the prosecutor went in and requested the gag. And then the judge, instead of just gagging the parties, which is typically what they'll do if they mm-hmm. think it's going to be a high profile case, like they do in most of them, you know, it's like we saw a lot of gag cases recently. And the problem was that she made it so overly broad. She was gagging everybody, public officials, like, and it was so horribly written, which you come to find out when you read the actual Supreme Court, the Arkansas Supreme Court's opinion, mm-hmm. was like a cut and paste job from like a different gag order from a different case, which I believe had been struck down already. So like, this isn't even her language. She takes it. She's like, oh, like super overly broad. She was gagging the world from talking about the case. The Arkansas Supreme Court, and the opinion is great, but a concurring opinion in that is worth you taking a few minutes to read to your audience, because it's a real body slam of the judge in that case. So ultimately, it was a no-brainer for them. Mm-hmm. And you know, and it does. It still begs the question, why? Because you could have gagged the parties, right? The lawyers and any of the court staff. I mean, that's not that uncommon in high-profile cases. So like, but that's not what she did. She went so far above and beyond that is what the Supreme Court found to be outrageous. And that's why they immediately, without any kind of hesitation, just struck the gag order and said, there you go. This thing's not gagged any longer. So, because I mean, it's like with a gag order, and it seemed like we just weren't going to see any of the documents either. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like they were trying to try the case in the dark. That thing that I hate so much. It's like we have a right as the citizens of this country to know what is going on in our courts.
Yeah.
It's like it's the entire purpose of having public trials. Well, we have an absolute right for transparency and to hold our government accountable for cases like this. This is where you hold the government accountable. This is where you're saying wrong. Mm-hmm. Did the wrong thing here. This guy should not be having to live through the nightmare of a second degree murder charge hanging over his head for a year or more.
Yeah.
Pending trial, sitting through a trial with his freedom on the line, with his family living through this fucking nightmare. It's outrageous. Yeah. It's outrageous. That's why you try cases in the public. That's why we have the right to know, because we should be able to, and we have the right to point our finger and tell the government, no, this is wrong.
Yeah. Well, we've been seeing a lot of it lately where, and I get protecting integrity of investigations. I understand that. And should law enforcement come to someone and say, hey, we're in the middle of this investigation. If you get anything on this, could you hold back? Yes. Responsible journalists would do that. This is not that. This is not a gag order for that whatsoever. And they're not good at communicating in this state either when it comes to any of that with their citizens or with journalists. Instead, they make these sweeping orders of, we know better than you, and that's it. That's the law. Let's put our big hats on and do a circle jerk. That seems to be what happens quite often. And then you get nightmares like this. I mean, the family couldn't speak out. That clearly violated their First Amendment rights, and it eventually obviously was struck by the Supreme Court. But again, what is the purpose of even... I just don't get what's going through some of these prosecutors' heads.
I don't know.
I mean, it's just, there's great ones out there, and there's some where it's like, who the hell are you protecting?
Yeah.
You know, and if you're not, what, I mean, because incompetence can also masquerade sometimes as nefarious behavior. And incompetence can just be incompetence, too. And I'm wondering if it's just that. Are we just dealing with really incompetent people here that are just, well, this is another case, Bill. Let's do this and follow this rule and not really look at the human end of any of this.
Yeah. And you know what the thing is, man, when you kind of think about reform in our system, like the criminal justice system, it's hard to try to figure out how to fix these things that we all can see is going on. And frankly, you know, one of my favorite things about the internet is just the ability to access information in a way that we never have been able to in our entire existence. Mm-hmm. Everything's out there for public consumption. And if you have trustworthy sources of information, you're learning things about the system that were just hidden away forever since the beginning of it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you had a small case in Arkansas in 1988, if this case happened in Arkansas in 1983, I wouldn't know a fucking thing about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, the facts, it never would have made it into a Chicago newspaper. It never would have made it onto a Chicago newscast. I would know nothing about it. So the world has gotten infinitely smaller. Mm-hmm. And when you sit and think about like how to try to fix it, when there's so many eyes on it now, it's becoming a more pressing issue because more of us are getting more and more concerned mm-hmm. about the shit that we're seeing in certain cases. And we're like, man, this is fucked up. And, you know, it's got to start somewhere because, T, you don't have to ever have tried a case as a prosecutor in order to get elected the prosecutor of your county. You run for that office.
Yeah.
So you could go in blind. Running, I'm a tough on crime campaign platform. I'm going to fucking lock all these awful people up. And they go into that office and I'm not aware that they receive any kind of training in terms of vetting cases, in terms of making gut calls on cases where you're like, all right, this is the fact pattern. This is the evidence. I'm going to make a gut call on this one. And we're going to table it. Or if they have made the charges and they hear public sentiment is outraged and they look at the facts of the case, they look at the statutes and they're like, you know what? I've thought better of it. I'm going to table it. We're getting rid of it. You just don't see it happening.
No,
you know, you just don't see it happening. So I think there's got to be some kind of mandatory training for these young prosecutors or people that are elected into that position to go in and learn how to vet cases in a different type of way in terms of giving it a broader look and not being so myopic, you know, because it's just, and I'm not even talking about like cases where it's iffy, like a whodunit,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, if they've got enough evidence that they think that they can get a conviction on it, then, you know, take it to trial.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what the job is. And in cases like this, though, where there seems to be an affirmative defense, where there's a factual scenario that exists that is mind-boggling to the normal person in terms of why the state would move forward with this case. I mean, that's the kind of case where you want them to look at it critically and think about it for a long long, hard while and then come to a conclusion based on, you know, their training in mm-hmm. terms of what they've learned on how to view cases like this and what's appropriate, because they just have so much power.
Yeah.
The prosecutors. I mean, and you know, it's like, it's scary.
Is this a thing where, I mean, there's still this adjustment period going on? Are we still in this adjustment period where all these communities, they're not used to being held accountable to the level that they are forever? Like you were saying earlier, in 1985, you would have had no idea about it unless you went to this town and went to the library and looked up the micro reel of this being in the newspapers. It just wouldn't have traveled. But now all of these things travel. And then when they have all these people pointing at them going, this is really messed up the way you're handling this, they don't know what to do. So they lash back at the people who are pointing out the insanity of their actions. They're operating essentially like it's 1985, and they're shocked when they're being called to the carpet on it, not only by independent journalists, but then they're citizens who are outraged because they're finally seeing clear as day what's going on behind the curtain.
Yeah. I mean, yes, the answer is yes. I think that has to be a major role in this. And, you know, kind of like our role as citizens is that we have the opportunity to vote that person out of office, which in this particular situation makes it all the more befuddled.
It doesn't make any sense. I mean,
this guy has to know what the temperature is in his county, right? He's got to fucking know.
This is like job suicide.
It's right. And I just don't get it, which always leads us back on that creepy, scary, weird road of, like, what the fuck is going on here?
I mean, unless you really don't want to be the DA anymore and this is your road out, you want to get voted out for prosecuting this case.
Yeah.
But that's an insane way of doing it. I can't imagine what's going on. That's where we get back to the creepy road. What's going on behind the scenes?
Right. What's back behind the curtain, man? And is it something we can handle? And it's kind of like What's the other case down?
The judge?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mickey Steins.
Yeah, the Steins case.
Steins case.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you can't help but think, and you've heard a lot of rumblings that there was, I mean, we all know that Steins' daughter's phone number was in the judge's phone for reasons unknown. And that kind of stuff just really kind of drags you to that dark place as to like, well,
What's going on here, man?
Yeah. You know, so, and it's like, it's got that vibe to it, you know, and you and I are neither one of us are really big conspiracy people. It's not to say that I don't think that they happen. I think that there's some people get together and like plan shit like there, but in terms of like governmental conspiracy, I mean, maybe I'm just naive, you know, maybe this shit is like, I mean, if you go down rabbit holes, some of these accounts on X that are like big on like government, mm-hmm. like I'm talking like big governmental conspiracies, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, it seems like there's some smoke there, but you just never know.
You need the right people to carry them out. And quite often when you look at the individuals involved in these cases, they can barely carry out like day-to-day activities versus a conspiracy of some sort. And there's certainly some in the fold that may be able to, but there's usually, that's the problem. It takes multiple people to carry out a conspiracy. And that's where the problem lies within. And that's where I feel like in so many times it ends up landing in incompetence versus conspiracy, but it looks a lot like conspiracy. And that's the scary part of it. The people who are demonstrating incompetence are completely clueless to the optics that it looks like a conspiracy.
Yeah, and I think you're probably right. I think that there's probably way more incompetent people in positions all over the country.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that have positions of power that shouldn't be there, that were either elected there or promoted to that position. And, you know, I mean, we're a country filled with small towns.
Yeah.
You know, and people that you know, may not be the most educated people that are just not really suited for that particular position when the shit really goes down. Mm-hmm. When you get a crime or an investigation that requires people that really know what the fuck they're doing, mm-hmm. you know, and it's thrust upon you and you're like, oh shit, I don't know what to, I mean, like you get that sense about you know, what happened in Carroll County in Delphi, you know, that like that, you know, and I'm friends with a couple of law enforcement officers down there that have, you know, told me without question, that was just an absolutely butchered investigation. And, you know, the guys that worked at Carroll County that, you know, have seen my coverage and have reached out and I've become friends with. And, you know, so it's like, you're right. I mean, I think most of the time it is incompetence. You know, but there's one truth that I know in all my years that I figured out, T, and that is always follow the money. Always follow the money. Whoever came up with that old money is the root of all evil fucking nailed it.
How does it apply here though?
It does. Who knows? Who knows? Like that, you've got to follow the money trail. You've got to like it, like if it's a situation, who knows, but you always follow the money. It's always money in some way, shape or form. Cause believe me, power and position equates to money. There's always money involved.
Yeah, I think there's, I would agree there's probably something like that here, but I think there may be more predatory behavior involved somewhere along the line.
Again, that's that that boils down to protecting themselves, their position of power and money.
And who, I have no idea. I'm not naming any. I don't know. But it just, there's just, there's smoke.
Mostly speculating right now.
There's smoke over here. And either somebody, you know, set off some extra smoke bombs from the 4th of July, or there's something on fire. And that's what we want to figure out.
I think we can say, T, something stinks in low note.
The truth is, gag orders have their place. They can protect witnesses, ensure fair trials, and keep investigations clean. But this is an abuse of a gag order. It was not that. This was a muzzle slapped on the public, the press, and even the victim's own family, all under the pretense of preserving the integrity of a case. Meaning, don't look at how stupid we are over here. We don't talk about it out loud because that might make us look bad. Arkansas has skills at that. And when you look at who benefited from the silence, it sure as hell wasn't Aaron Spencer. As Bob laid out, this wasn't just an overstep. It was a constitutional mess. The Arkansas Supreme Court didn't just lift the gag. They body slammed it. And in doing so, they gave us a rare moment of clarity. That secrecy isn't always about protecting justice. Sometimes it's about protecting power, incompetence, or worse. And so we're left with a DA who refuses to read the room, the prosecution that's dug in so deep they're hitting bedrock, and a family who just wants the nightmare to end. The question now isn't whether Aaron Spencer should be on trial. It's whether the people pushing this case are so desperate to keep control of the narrative. Because when you try a case in the dark, when you silence the people most effective, when your court documents need a crowbar just to pry open, that's not justice. That is something else. Something stinks in Lonoke. And we're not done asking why and digging and exposing. We're coming for you. Let me know your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi to do that. To press subscribe wherever you're listening or watching us as well, so you don't miss any of our coverage on this case and the many we have for you here at True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. I am Tony Bruschi, and we'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.